Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb, sparkle, be on the way.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks, breaks the bar held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Manning the first. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good Skittles time. You're never too old for Skittles.
Welcome to this week's installment of New York Sports 30. I'm your host, Brian Sousa, coming at you from the concrete jungle of Queens, which feels more like a frozen tundra than a city borough. I'm bringing in my boy, Aaron Jacobs, joining me this week. How's the weather up there by you, buddy?
Got a little bit of snow now, and I just hope spring is really around the corner because I'm over it.
for the lack of winter that we had last year, it's sure making up for it, and it's not so much the temperature as it is that wind.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. I can't feel my hands. I can't feel anything, man.
It's truly unbelievable. So we're bringing you New York Sports 30 on a Tuesday because it works out in our schedule, all right? It's not easy figuring out when, you know, Aaron's got a real job. This isn't a real job, although it would be nice if it was. Now, look, Aaron, this is where I'm going to start. I'm going to start with the Knicks because we're going to hit a few topics here, but I'm going to start with the Knicks. And, Aaron, have you ever seen Inception?
I have seen Inception.
Was your mind blown the first time you saw Inception? Mellow Field makes me feel like, Mellow and the Knicks make me feel like I'm living in Inception. Not the part where my mind is blown, more so the part where it's a dream sequence and an alternate reality altogether.
At the
end of Inception, it's kind of left up to your imagination. I'm going to ruin the ending of Inception right now. Leonardo DiCaprio spins his totem. And if it falls over, then you know that he's in real life. And if it stays spinning forever, endlessly, then you know that he's in a dream. And you never see it fall over. It's sort of left up to your imagination how the movie ends. That's not really the point, except for the part where, like, we don't know if Leo is stuck in a dream. Yeah, that's kind of how I felt when I first heard that Mello was going to be out 4 to 6 months instead of 2 months. Because now all that we were screaming and yelling about with Melo playing in the All-Star game and not shutting it down, we were proven just like 100% right. And now I could just see this starting to fall off a cliff. Are you worried, Aaron? Are you as worried as I am?
You have to be worried. You do. You have to be worried because now you're looking at 4 to 6 months. 4 to 6 months kind of puts you at, you're still before the beginning of next season, but if there's a setback, then you're looking at, oh man, maybe he's going to miss the beginning of next season. And no matter
that's
what,
it. One setback away from messing up training camp, just one.
That's right. And although these guys are, you know, most of them heal quickly. We know, we've seen that. We've seen them come back freakishly fast sometimes. But there is always a chance of a setback. And even if you upgrade the team next year, and even if you get your number one overall pick, if you don't have Carmelo Anthony there, I mean, what's really improving? I mean, now you're just missing another key piece. He's supposed to be your first building block. If your first building block just got hit with a sledgehammer, guess what? You got nothing.
And what I'm scared of is that Dwayne Wade and Danny Granger had the same operation. Wade is sort of working his way back, not what he used to be. Danny Granger is an actual shell of himself. And it's something that you worry about, but I guess it's all about putting the pieces around Melo. He's not supposed to be the main piece. I think people think of him too much like they put him on the level of LeBron, and he's not. No one else is the guy who makes his team better, who plays the best, most tenacious defense, who distributes the ball. obviously Melo's a volume scorer, and he's very, very good at what he does, but you have to put the pieces around him, and that's why we're giving, you know, Phil a chance before we decide whether or not he could construct a team. But, you know,
right. When I say building block, when I say building block, I don't mean that Carmelo Anthony should be your number one piece. But he's obviously your quintessential. He's your scorer. So now you have a scorer. Now you need a defensive piece to in the middle to protect the rim, and you need a guy who can distribute properly.
There you go.
It's a process, and you know what? Quite frankly, the Knicks don't have anything else except Carmelo Anthony right now. Might you get Jahlil Okafor and get that building block in the middle? Sure. Now you're running low a little bit on point guards because after the trade deadline, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit, but you still need to have all those pieces. And if Carmelo Anthony suffers a setback, even if you were to get two of the other pieces you need, you're still going into next season looking at, hey, maybe this team is not as good as we thought they were, especially if Carmelo Anthony comes back running like Danny Granger. Because then guess what? For the next 4 years, we're all in trouble.
And I guess there's no way of knowing if he comes back and he's ready for training camp and the 6 months are still enough time, if it takes that long, then no harm, no foul. The principle and the point of this is that it could have been easily avoided had he not cared about playing in the All-Star game. And that's very annoying, and I know it's beating a dead horse. This whole Knicks discussion is beating a dead horse. Killing the Knicks is beating a dead horse. I got blocked by Frank Isola on Twitter on Sunday because he was beating a dead horse, and I got at him a little bit. Not like a troll. He was a little quick with the block button. I'll tell that story to you in a minute. But here's my one last thing with Melo. I'm not going to be played for a fool, Aaron. We shouldn't be. If we didn't know, but they had to have known that this was more serious than a two-month thing. I guess we all should have known that debridement isn't some arthroscopic procedure that's only going to take 8 weeks to heal. But the point is just that, you know, Phil needed to pull Melo aside and tell him the 4 years and the $100 million was more important than London, than the All-Star game. The Knicks have to come first. The writing's on the wall. The stage is set for something to go wrong and for both of them to get blamed. And I love Melo. Maybe I'm a Melo apologist, and I'll defend Melo just about till the end, until you're indefensible. And if Melo's not able to come back and be what he was before, it's indefensible that he's not ready to go because he had to push off the surgery for the All-Star game. It's just not.
Right. You can't defend him. I wish there was a way. Listen, we're on a Blog Talk Radio. I wish there was a way Carmelo Anthony could hear what I'm saying. In New York, we're knowledgeable sports fans. Whereas if you go to some other places, you might be able to pull the wool off some other people's eyes. But guess what? We know our basketball. The second that you heard you might have partially torn your patella or whatever part of your knee it is, that's it. You're done. We just gave you 5 years and $124 million. We lived through Allen Houston. We saw that decline. We lived through Patrick Ewing being the great that he was. And even at the end of his career with us, we might have given up on him and sent him on his way, but we watched these players get massive contracts and then not be able to live up to them. And I don't want to say it like that. I don't think Carmelo Anthony is going to do that. He's still 30, going to be 31. There's still a future for him, obviously. But don't try and coat it. Don't try and sugarcoat it. Like, you made a mistake. You screwed up. Call it what it is.
That's exactly what it is. And anything that the Knicks are going to be the next 4 years under Phil Jackson, Melo has to be the impetus for. He has to be the thing that pushes it. Even if he's not the 30-point scorer that he used to be, you know, he's gonna play the main role. He's the scorer in the middle, and if they're playing a triangle, it's the most important piece that you can have. You have to start somewhere. Literally nothing else around him. So part of that is because the Knicks traded away everything around them for nothing. And that's what has made these Phil Jackson trades so bad, Aaron. At the deadline, we saw some of the Knicks' potential targets out the door. Reggie Jackson was happy to leave Oklahoma City to Detroit. Dragic goes to Miami, where he's going to re-sign, and that upsets me a lot. I think Aaron Aflalo was a good pickup for Portland to make LaMarcus Aldridge happy, tell him that we are trying to win. We will go and pick up another guy that'll make this team better. So, you know, all of a sudden, Gasol and Aldridge don't leave. These point guards are gone. Maybe the Knicks don't end up with the first pick in the draft. It could get a lot worse I'm trying not to, you know, freak out about it. It seemed like it was going according to plan, but this could end up being a very, very bumpy road unless Phil Jackson pulls a rabbit out of his hat somewhere.
Listen, man, you know I agree with you on a lot of topics. We talk off air and everything, but I'm going to play a little devil's advocate with you here, okay? Because I
do
like
it.
What you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but hear me out on this one. I don't think the trade deadline obviously was kind of a bust. You missed out on players.
Well,
but hear me out.
Not a bust. Hold on. Not a bust because the Knicks didn't make a deal. It's because
if they had
Chandler or had Shumpert to give up, they would have just gotten a lot more than they did. Mozgov went
that's
for
true.
Two first-rounders. Chandler went for 2 second-rounders.
That's true. Okay, so I agree with you because we also didn't clean house on with our picks trying to get players. So I agree with you. It's not a bust. Was it a disappointment? Yes, it was a little bit of a disappointment. But let me just play a little devil's advocate here. Even if the Knicks don't end up with the first pick, hypothetically, let's say, there's a really good chance they're still going to end up top five. Guess what? You can still end up with a player that you can build with. There's Emmanuel Mudiay, the point guard from China. He's a building block.
Yeah.
You need a distributor. You need a defensive point guard. That's your guy. There's the name's escaping me right now, but the combo guard from Ohio State. I don't know if you know his name.
Russell.
But
yeah.
Okay,
Russell,
so
yeah.
he's another Carl Anthony Towns. Right. You can grab Carl Anthony Towns. If you still end up in the top five, you're still getting a guy that you can build with and around. So I don't think that's necessarily, you know, while it's a concern, obviously, you want Jahlil Okafor. He looks like he's going to be a great pro prospect. He's already got footwork in the paint, all that good stuff. But, you know, I'm just going to say that about the draft for now. So I still think
you get a building block, even
if you don't.
You're right. It's not as if Okafor might be the best prospect, but it's not as if he's the only one. There are some other guys. I like Mudiay. I don't like that we can't see him play. That he's good for him. He's getting money. He's pulling a Brandon Jennings. He's going to play overseas,
right,
and then he's going to come back. You know, I guess one good thing was that, you know, in my mind, it still goes back to, I wanted Dragic, but I see Dragic staying in Miami, especially if Wade and Bosch are healthy. But if Phil Jackson is able to somehow convince Marc Gasol that he doesn't want to be on the Grizzlies anymore, and the only thing I could think of is that if the Grizzlies don't go far in the playoffs, you use the weak Eastern Conference and a fresh slate and all this money and the draft pick to your advantage. If you get Mudiay and then you got your center in the same package.
Right.
Or if you were able to get Dragic and you were able to get Okafor. It's just, there's a way of making it work out, but it's not served up there on a platter for Phil Jackson. He's going to have to actually recruit someone in New York with those 13 rings.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, like you were just saying, there's different combos. That's all I'm trying to say. There's different combos that you can work out to make it work in New York. You can grab your point guard center some way, somehow. You know, it's going to take some convincing to get Gasol here. But listen, you could say, hey, look, your buddy Jose Calderon's still here. We didn't get rid of him. He might not be our starting point guard, but he's our backup point guard, you know? Whatever. Whatever you can do, it doesn't matter. At this point, it's time for Phil to start kissing some ass come free agency time, as far as I'm concerned. That's all I got to say about that.
Isn't it also up to the Knicks? Now, look, I think that the complaining about the triangle goes way too far. People don't realize it's not a set play. It's not even like it's a philosophy that it makes basketball. It gets worse before it gets better. You have to get used to it, and then it makes basketball simply as
you.
It's not as difficult to figure out as the Knicks make it look because of the personnel that they have. But the Knicks do have to decide whether or not they're going to be playing this triangle moving forward, because they're going to have to look for personnel that matches it.
Right, you do. You have to find personnel that matches the triangle offense. But hear me out. I don't understand all the complaining about the triangle when you knew it was going to be a transition period coming into the first season. But on top of that, it's not like the team plays top 10 defense and is dead last in the league in offense it's not like they're top 10 in the league defensively to the point that you could say, oh, the triangle offense is so bad, it's the worst offense in the league, why are we still doing it? You have problems on both sides of the ball. And the Knicks' problem for years has been the fact that you can't defend point guards or shooting guards. Anybody who's relatively quick blows by our guards. It's been that way since Raymond Felton. So as far as I'm concerned, you need a guard that's going to stand in front of his man and not let him drive to the basket and make it look like it's, kindergarten versus JV. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, you know,
good
players make it look better. You know, J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert, might have come back and embarrassed us because they're playing roles on a very good basketball team. With the Knicks, with this personnel, there was no way for them to succeed. But now listen, we got another like 5 minutes or so right here for this. When I say New York Jets, number 6 overall pick, what comes to your mind?
Marcus Mariota.
Want him, whether you want him or not, it comes to your mind because that's what they're talking about. He obviously had a great combine. I don't put too much stock into it, but it does seem that the learning curve for Mariota might not be as wide as people think. But where do you stand on whether or not the Jets should draft a quarterback or trading down? Where do you stand on this, bro?
Okay, I don't want to try to get too into detail, but I'm going to say this.
All right, because
Marcus
Mariota.
Right, yeah, we do, exactly. But Marcus Mariota looks we knew he was going to run well. We knew he was going to do all – we knew he was going to jump well, run well. Athletically, we know who the guy is. I think at the combine, he proved he's a little bit farther along with him being a quarterback, intangibles, five-step drop, three-step drops. I think he's further ahead of that than I thought. Do I think it would be a bad idea for the Jets to grab him? No. If he comes to you at 6, you certainly can grab him, and you can come back and address your other needs in the draft, in free agency, or, you know, free agency obviously comes first, but you can address your other needs later.
They do have cap space.
Listen, you're looking at almost, I think it's, what are they projecting now, like almost $50 million, something like that, 40 and change, whatever it might be, in cap space.
That's a lot of money for John Izik to sit on and do nothing with.
Right, exactly. So now, McCagnan, it's time for you to spend some money because we have a lot of needs to fix on this team. But as far as the number 6 pick goes, I think it's in the best interest. Now that Mariota has hyped himself up so much, and teams are going to be looking at him under a microscope, obviously, from now until draft time. The kid interviews well. He's athletically fine. I think now it's time to analyze your trades, because if he does fall to you, there's plenty of quarterback needy teams that are not in the top 10. I'm going to give you one. I already told we've talked about the Eagles, and I think that's potential right there to happen. But I'm going to give you another scenario because I've been thinking about it lately. Cleveland Browns pick at number 12 and number 19. I'll tell you what. I'll take pick 12 and pick 19 plus a pick later on or next year for Marcus Mariota. I'll do that all day, because you will get two prospects at 12 and 19 that you can probably start, and you'll end up with a pick in future, in either later on in the draft or future next year. Plus, you'll be able to, since you have so many needs, you're now addressing two instead of just one, which you could move forward with Geno Smith this year. I know Jets fans are going to cringe hearing me say that, but guess what? The kid hasn't really gotten a fair chance. Two different offenses, drafted from a spread system. Now Changeli is going to run kind of a spread system, or so we think. We don't know for sure yet. Give Geno a chance. That's all I'm telling you.
Well, we'll say
if it works out, then okay, go ahead. I'll let you go.
I was all on board with seeing what Geno was, and I don't necessarily want to see him bench, because I don't think the Jets are a Super Bowl team next year anyway. If there's someone who's better than him, I want them to play. But if everyone gets a fair chance and Geno still wins out, then I'm fine with him playing. But you know, it's kind of like, reminds me of the last 2 years of Sanchez, where everything wasn't necessarily his fault. The deck was stacked against him, but Geno made his own bed a lot of the time, just like Sanchez did at the end.
He did. That's right. I'm not sitting here telling you Geno Smith is the answer, because obviously he might not be. But I'm telling you, it takes a lot to switch from offense to offense, and it takes a lot that fans sometimes don't realize. It's a lot to have to switch offenses as a quarterback. That's a lot of information, a lot of different X's and O's. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of verbiage,
a lot of talk.
Right.
You're right.
He's changed so many times, it's tough to really have a fair analysis of him. He had a great game to end the season against Miami, didn't he? I mean,
in December when the Jets are out of it, dude.
Right. Well, again, it doesn't count. Right. But, you know, which I'm agreeing with you.
Here's all
I'm going to finish with, all right? I think Geno is going to be – if it does work out that we don't get Mariota, let's say, or we trade back, or whatever the case may be, he doesn't fall to us. I'm okay with having Geno and a backup, let's say hypothetically Josh McCown, somebody, a veteran backup. I'm okay with that for next season. If it doesn't work out in your favor, guess what? We probably weren't going to the Super Bowl next year anyway. I hate to tell you, Jet fans, but it's probably not going to happen next season. I mean, stranger things have happened, but it's probably not going to. So if we have to deal with one more year of Geno, I promise you we'll get through it together. Promise you.
Yeah, how that invitation's comforting. We don't know what the Jets are going to live with. It's hard to say because for a team with a lot of holes, if they do end up trading down, you know, to speak to your Browns theory, I'm not totally against that because when you have a lot of holes, there's nothing wrong with maximizing your returns, and that's what the Jets would be doing. It's tough when you don't have a quarterback, but what I believe is the only thing worse than not having a quarterback is taking the wrong quarterback. And, you know, so if you want Mariota, go get him. But I'm just saying for McCagnan and Bowles' sake, you better be right because the last GM and coach wasn't.
I obviously don't want to take up all the time, but just one more thing. Geno Smith came from a spread system where he lit it up in West Virginia. Correct or incorrect?
Correct. Correct.
Marcus Mariota comes from a form of a spread system at Oregon where he lit it up. Correct or incorrect?
That is
correct. You might be drafting a more athletic version of Geno Smith, and where does that get you? Maybe a couple more rushing touchdowns? That's all I'm saying. I'm not comparing the two. I'm not saying Mariota won't be more successful because smarter.
What we're hoping that what we're underestimating is that exactly, is the cerebral aspect of it. I don't think Geno, you know, fails in the physical attributes of playing quarterback. He's got a strong arm, and he's mobile, and he occasionally makes the right decision, but it really is all in his mind. And if Mariota's more comfortable and Chan Gailey, who's an experienced offensive coordinator, is going to be able to tailor a system, any coach for that matter, even Chip Kelly, tailor a system that fits his needs, well, then it'll work. But you do fear of just drafting maybe a little bit better version of the same guy. Because let's face it, we need a lot better version of what Geno Smith was, not just a little bit.
Exactly. That's the whole thing I was trying to say.
Aaron, this gets us worked up, man, and I'm with you because it might not even be March yet, but like I don't think I'm gonna shake off this season until I see some results next season.
No, I hear you. I mean, you want to see progress. Even if you're not going to the Super Bowl, you want to see progress. And guess what? Last time I checked, there's needs at not only quarterback, cornerback, offensive line, wide receiver. There's needs all over the field. So if you can step back and satisfy two of those needs in this first round and kill it in free agency, you're in good shape moving forward.
I'm with you. Listen, Aaron, man, it's always great to have you on. I know you went to Stony Brook. I don't know if you care that my Albany Great Danes are leading America East to the 13-1 conference record.
Oh, listen, man, don't start with me. Don't do that. Seawolves, baby.
What's a seawolf?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know. It's a mythical creature.
No, I don't feel bad. I'm just like a big dog. But all right, brother, I'll talk to you soon, and we'll be back at it next week.
All right, man, sounds good.
That is my colleague, Aaron Jacobs, who wrote weeks ago about the Jets in Philadelphia trading all these picks and, you know, well, not the picks part. That was Manish Mehta at the Daily News. But about the theory of the Eagles giving up Nick Foles because Chip Kelly is gaga over Marcus Mariota. We have a few minutes left here. Baseball spring training has started. I'm going to kill it all by my lonesome here at the end. And, you know, it's weird. The Mets and the Yankees are in similar positions as far as relying on the health of some of their stars, most notably Masahiro Tanaka with a partially torn UCL, and Matt Harvey for the Mets coming off Tommy John. So the aces of the staffs are, I guess, the first people you look to for their health. Now, when you go to the Yankees, there's a whole other – well, for both teams, there's a host of question marks, a host of health issues, and a lot of ifs. For both. They're both listed in Vegas, I think, 81.5 wins over under. Obviously, 82 put you over 500. Both teams are looking to scratch out a playoff spot, and we'll get to the Mets and a potential playoff run. But I'm going to start with the Yankees. And we'll start with A-Rod because there's no other place you could start. He's just a superstar. He's a rock star. And that doesn't mean, you know, like when I say popular, it doesn't mean popular good. It means just popular, just well-known. He's just the most popular guy that there is. What he is actually is a character of himself, a one-man joke show wrecking crew. Sits down in front of the artist on the boardwalk for a picture, and when he gets up, the picture is Ronald McDonald because he turns everything into a clown show. You know, pardon my petty jokes, but that's really what it is. You know, he shows up early for spring training, something that most people look up upon, but the Yankees look down on him. It's a weird divorce. It's a weird marriage. It's going to be some opera that plays out, but you know what? He has the most thick cursive writing, and when push comes to shove, you can't take that away from him. You know, the weird thing about the Yankees is there's no face of the team for the first time in two decades, life without Derek Jeter. You know, when you're used to something, you kind of take it for granted, even though, you know, Jeter might not be the loudest guy. He's the guy in the, you know, he's steering the ship. He's the captain. That's it. That's all you have to say. Without that guy, you know, I wonder if that'll have an impact on the morale, continuity, cohesion, coalescence of the team in general. And, of course, the health issues with the Yankees, and we'll get more into this as the season approaches. This is, of course, sort of the pitchers and catchers spring training primer here. You know, Tanaka, C.C. Sabathia, Mark Teixeira, Carlos Beltran, and A-Rod. You know, there's not many people you know what to expect from besides Brent Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury, and I think Dylan Betances shines in that closer role taking over for David Robinson. I think he is the next answer at closer for the Yankees. But besides Ellsbury and Gardner, who do you know, you know, what guy in this lineup do you, or the rotation for that matter, do you know is going to produce for you? What the Yankees are trying to do is rely on the bats that they spent $500 million on last season, tempered the budget, and this year is important to see if that'll ever be done again, because if 2015 doesn't work out, you best believe Hal Steinbrenner is going after the hottest free agent, even if he costs the most money, even if it puts the Yankees way over budget and in the luxury tax penalty and all of that. Because you know Yankee fans are going to be clamoring for it if this season isn't successful. And there's so much more to say about the Yankees, but we only have like 3.5 minutes left, and I want to get to a couple things. My Mets. This is a rare season with expectations. No playoffs since 2006. If you were to ask Citi Field what the playoffs looked like, it'd shrug at you and go, I don't know. Like if you ask a Jet fan under 50 what a franchise quarterback is, you'd get the same answer. The Mets haven't made the playoffs since Citi Field opened in 2009. I'll get to the fences being moved in at some point before the season starts, but obviously the strength of the Mets, one of the deepest, baddest, and I say bad meaning good, rotations in the league. Harvey, Zach Wheeler, Rookie of the Year, Jacob DeGrom, John Neese, and Bartolo Colon, with Dylan G, who's been a starter his whole career, left over in a spot starter long relief role. Unless somebody gets hurt, he's an easy insert into the rotation. Henry Mejia will start out as the closer. Bobby Parnell slated to come back in May. Jairus Familia is thought of as the closer of the future. That bullpen is going to be huge. I have a piece up that just went out today on the Sports Journal on the website, h4entertainment.com. Check it out. It's very, very long with a lot of nerdy and geeky analytics in it. I apologize. The pitching staff will carry them as a whole. This isn't the dead ball era. There aren't complete games like there used to be. You need an entire staff, not just a rotation. But certainly the Mets will only go as far as that rotation takes them, and the bullpen's gotta take it the rest of the way. You know, there's health of David Wright, Lucas Duda picking up where he left off. Can Kevin Long help Curtis Granderson? The whole shortstop situation with Wilmer Flores. Travis d'Arnaud needs to take another leap forward. A ton of unanswered questions. I'm going to get to specifics at another time, playoffs or bust. But for my quick little, I'm going to close it out. Our closing time, after we talk about the Mets closers, will be our mini hockey report here for the last minute and a half, and along with the stats of the week. The Islanders at 80 points have are 2 points in front of the Rangers at 78 points, 1-2 in the Metropolitan Division. How's that for New York hockey? The Rangers have 3 games in hand. They look like they're going to catch the Islanders. As long as Henrik comes back healthy, this is going to work out exactly how they want it. You know, 7-1-2 the last 10 games. Cam Talbot's playing well enough to win in February. Gets the weak schedule. You get Hank back just in time when the schedule gets tough. 5 playoff teams in a row to start the month of March. You need Hank down the stretch. The Islanders are slowing down a little bit as of late, losing ground on the Rangers, but gaining it on Pittsburgh, keeping themselves in great playoff position. It's an offense that just needs Kyle Lopezzo back to bolster that top line so they can balance out the scoring. They need to fire on all cylinders when the playoffs arrive offensively and keep being that deep team, that balanced scoring attack, and they need Pozo to do that. And they also need to keep an eye on the workload of Yaroslav Halak, who's played well this season, but has never had a workload quite like this. Keep an eye on both of those teams to add some depth at the March 2nd trade deadline. And my stats of the week go along that the Rangers, plus 40 in goal differential, highest in the Eastern Conference, they're on quite a roll. And the Islanders, 19-3-1 in the Metropolitan Division. They're very good against their own division, and they're likely going to have to play a division opponent the first round of the playoffs, so maybe that bodes well for them. New York hockey is doing great right now. That's going to do it. And I'm done fast talking for the entire half hour. I didn't play my mix in the beginning, but I'll play it at the end. This is the Diddy Bad Boys for Life instrumental. If anybody wants to go get it, that's my theme song, New York 430. We out.